name's Hog.
Nidio
Hog.
Nidio.
What?
Nidio Games.
Nidio Hog. Nidio Hog.
Nidio.
Nidio Game.
This is the Idle Thumbs Conf Grenade for GDC 2011, 25th Anniversary Edition, to the final chapter, probably.
Oh, I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Jake Rodkin.
I'm Sean Bannerman.
And I am James Spafford.
And we are joined
by Nick the line. Brecken.
We're joined by Nick Brecken, who is
Nid Brecken.
Nid Hog Brecken. Brecken. Yeah.
Hi guys.
So,
hey Spaff.
Yes, this is actually Spaff, who three of you may have heard on the Idle Thumbs UK podcast back in 2008.
Ouch. Hey Merrick.
But yeah, like three quarters of the people who show up on this show who you don't recognize, Spaff was one of the guys who started Idle Thumbs back in 2004, and now he's here.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I heard video games.
Yes.
How was your GDC?
It was pretty good. It was tiring as hell, though. Yeah. I wanted to sleep.
Did you do any throughout. Of the sleeping?
Did you go to the sleeping panel?
The sleeping panel is generally one where you must wear a headset and have Japanese turned into broken English at 9:30 in the morning. That's generally...
Did they carry on the tradition this year of one of the translators being fantastic and one of them being completely questionable? That's a GDC tradition.
There's no questions.
The sleeping panel was definitely experimental gameplay session when we were both going to die.
That was sad, because that's usually one of the highlights of my GDC.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
And this year, it started off really awesome with that with the recursive 3D world where you can place a key into the model city of the level that you're in, and then a giant key falls from space and you use it as a bridge.
Yeah,
like you can keep going into smaller versions of the level you're already in. And things you do in any of the levels affect all the other, like, recursively different sized ones.
There was
it's really
that,
awesome.
And then what was Jason Rohrer?
Jason Rohrer showed his new game, what is it, Starfield Sky?
Yeah.
Which is already, it's actually already available from, and you can pay whatever you want on his website. But that's also recursive. So it's a sort of top-down shooter in the style of Bullet Hells, but not actually like that. Where you go inside enemies and power-ups.
Yeah, and... like every enemy is a level, so if you go inside of an enemy, you can fuck up their inner workings and then beat it and pop back out.
I didn't get how you went inside an enemy, because I got that, like, when you die, you go in,
inside
like,
yourself.
You zoom, yeah, inside
yeah,
yourself
it was
and
weird.
That out, but I didn't work out how you could go inside the
but
power-ups. I think I was nodding off it.
Both of those
already.
Spatially recursive games were really cool,
yeah.
And a lot of the other stuff was either confusing or poorly mic'd or was buffered by a lot of
really
introductions.
Cool.
It was hard to understand what was going on.
Yeah.
So people who are listening to this will have no idea what we're talking about other than Spaff, you fell asleep during part of it.
Well, I was tired, but then there was that one game about meditation in which a spiral of doom was just spinning around the screen and you had to control another bar within the spiral without it hitting the spiral. Whilst chanting a mantra,
you went into
that point. I was just
went into a meditative state during the meditation simulator and fell asleep.
Well, because I don't know, some people were poorly mic'd, so that guy was kind of just mumbling some stuff, and then he would just start chanting a mantra.
Yeah, he actually
like in time, whatever. And then I was just like, oh my god, coffee so bad.
I successfully snuck off for coffee.
Yeah, and I was like,
much to your chagrin.
Chris, I want a coffee.
I didn't get you one, you bitch.
Oh, fuck you. There was that one game about a brain that made no sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
We can probably leave that one at that. There was a game about a brain that none of us understood.
Yeah.
Because we don't have brains.
They were just sleepy.
I'm trying to think of what else we saw at GDC of note, but it's been a couple days and I've slept.
I went to see the failed game concepts thing.
Did anyone else here see that?
I didn't see that one.
I didn't see it, but Keenan went from Telltale, the programmer, and he said it was good.
Cool.
It was interesting. Yeah. It was a mix of, like, some of them... Because it was meant to be, like, concepts of games that were, like, dumped. But some of them were like, oh, it's a game we made badly and actually released. Which is kind of defeating the point.
So there's a released failure as well.
What were some of the release failures that they called out?
What was that one? Glenn will know. He's over there.
It's the guy from Star...
Brad Wardell.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, were they talking about Elemental?
Perhaps. It was that was the worst presentation of all things. He failed from classic sci-fi.
This is a great recounting of a failed.
However, the good ones.
The failed presentation on the failed presentation.
It was similar to the experiment on the game presentation where it started really good and then just went.
Yeah, it failed.
It was like a long
This
thought.
Is the meta-est thing ever. Every level of this is it's about failed.
So what was some good stuff from that?
You are failing right now.
Well, the 2D boy guys were there and they showed their next game they were going to make, which involved robots destroying a city, and how they were going to build up from that. And the cool thing about that was their concept was that robots walked along and destroyed cities and shot buildings and trampled people. And the idea was that once you destroyed a city, then the humans would somehow rebuild the city, and the next level would be their rebuilt city. But the first city in the game, you destroyed it by destroying a giant tower filled with milk that drowned the entire earth in milk. and so the humans came back from that by building a ginormous city-wide barge that floated around the earth. So you destroy that one, and because it's a boat, and everyone's learned from the Titanic that when boats sink, they go vertical, it kind of half sank and became like a thing sticking
like
out of
spire.
The earth. Yeah. And then, so the humans built a city on top of that, so it's like a giant tea thing sticking out of the milk. And then you destroyed that, and it was like,
Jesus.
Carrying on.
Another thing about
things.
This sounds like a failure to me.
Oh, but then they also decided that game would be a musical.
This gets better and better. I don't understand.
But so they like talked about how good this thing was, but then they went back and they were like, actually playing it was really boring. So they like took away all that amazing art and all that amazing cool crap, and then just turned everything into just squares that did stuff and shot things.
And
basically, it was a thing
that
played itself, and it was really boring.
Yeah.
So they were like, fuck this.
It's obviously completely different, but just when you were talking about the city, the rebuilding itself, all that stuff. That reminded me of Will Wright's talk about Red on Bungling Bay, which, like, it was Will Wright's first game, and it was a top-down shooter where you run around and you have to blow up factories and defeat this empire, but
The Bungling Empire.
Which apparently is a recurring foe in Broderbund.
Right, the Broderbund universe. It was
Lode Runner.
Apparently exists in the same continuity as fucking.
I don't remember the other one, but it was Lode Runner, Raid on Bungling Bay, and another one all
like Thunder Strike or
share the
like
same
that.
Universe.
Yeah, they all oppose the Bungling Empire.
Well, yeah. The Raid on Bungling Bay, like in many ways, it's just a very conventional kind of game where you just pilot a helicopter around and bomb stuff on the ground. Except that, because
well,
the
enemies
it,
are secretly
like,
running SimCity.
Yeah,
yeah,
I was going to say, you're playing against SimCity.
Like, all of the stuff on the ground is running this elaborate, like, manufacturing and supply chain where the factories are supplying things and there's like, trade
like,
routes in the sea.
Yeah, like,
and
the boats find resources in the oceans, deliver it to tanks who deliver it to factories who then have a build chain for how to restore their empire if you destroy it.
And I love the idea that even when Will Wright was making his very first game, it was just like, oh yeah, I'm going to build this place you destroy, and if, you know, this is they build the stuff that attacks you, and then they build this carrier that takes a long time, and it goes out to sea, and like, there's just this whole crazy procedural thing underlying just the faceless weird bungling enemies.
For people's reference, this Will Wright's talk at GDC was a postmortem of Bungling Bay.
You never really know with that guy. He'll say it's going to be.
Well, he said
the metaphysics.
I mean,
of
only half
design.
Of it was actually.
Yeah, only half of it was Raid on Bungling Bay. The other half was a extensive history of the Russian cosmonaut,
which he frequently delves into.
Yeah, his talks when he gets to the midpoint just plops into the Soviet space minute, which this year was
Russian
really good.
It's tough
space
when
minute.
You're telling somebody who doesn't know who Will Wright really is or doesn't really know what he's about. Like, they know he makes SimCity, but this sounds like he's just like an old and like your old grandpa who will just talk about anything and be really boring.
But he's the most dynamic.
No, he's super.
Speaking.
Yeah, he's incredibly dynamic.
Yeah,
and
he never
cogent and.
He's not really speaking about what you expect him to be doing.
No,
I'm not really sure how. He is used by, you know, you go to talk about Spore or something and EA using him to sell a game, but it's nothing to do with the game whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, no one else would be able to get away with that.
Yeah.
No, you have to be incredibly smart and Will Wright.
You have to actually have interesting things to say, which a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
I love that the Q&A also just turned into questions about the cosmonaut stuff as well.
Yeah,
though.
I know. That was good.
Wait, can you go back to... So wait a second. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, during the Q&A, someone asked Will Wright to... talk about the failure of the rocketry systems that Russia was using to try and get a man to the moon. And then he was like, oh, well, since you bring that up, 10 minutes of just like, what? Why is Will Wright lecturing everyone on the defects of Soviet rocketry? Good.
And everyone's also, just lapping it up, though.
Yeah.
Also, he represented himself visually in all of his slides as Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yes. he said that a fire in 1991 burned up all of his archives when it took out the hills in Arendo or wherever that was, so... He had no pictures of himself as a kid. But even when it got to the modern times in his talk, he was still Nicolas Cage.
So it was good. Yeah. Kind of just, there was one or two, and you're like, Nick Cage. But they just kept going and going. Yeah. I love Nick Cage.
A quality guy. I love Will Wright.
Yeah.
The game was funny because I'd never seen it being played before, and I'd never seen a YouTube clip of it. But, like, you don't really expect, like, an action game from Will Wright. But then guy's flying that helicopter and copped around and it's making classic like pew pew noises and blowing stuff up. You're like, what?
Well, then there's this whole community of people online who do speed runs for this game and people who remake it in 3D and with all these different art styles. What? I've certainly heard of the game, but I actually haven't played it.
The one thing out of that talk that is kind of common knowledge at this point, but is super interesting, is that the dynamic enemy system of that game, he built himself a limited graphical editor to build all the scenarios for it, and then after the game shipped, he kept fucking with it and kept fucking with it and kept adding more and more stuff, and then accidentally, slowly to deliberately turned the bungling empire into SimCity. Yeah. So that's weird.
Way to go, smart guy.
And good.
Also, there was very, very, there was a really interesting undercurrent in the postmortems at GDC, I thought, which was this notion of sort of finding the games that these guys were made. Like, the GDC had a series of classic postmortems for games that, except for Bejeweled, were all pretty much 20 years old or even older, as far as I can recall. And there was a really interesting undercurrent of sort of a lot of the people who made these games not entirely knowing what they were even trying to make.
What are some of the ones that you guys saw?
So I saw Will Wright on Bungling Bay, Eric Chahi on Another World, Peter Molyneux on Populous, and Ron Gilbert on Maniac Mansion, and all of those.
And then you saw Pac-Man guy
speaking about Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah, so I didn't see that one. But the ones I saw all had that element to them. Some of them even more than others. And Populous was by far the most extreme in that direction, where Peter Molyneux was making this game, and it was just this game that really wasn't anything like what Populous became. And,
oh, hey! I returned to science.
Even in a deployed city.
We're back at Chris's apartment.
Yeah, we're not, but false. We could be. And Will Wright Peter Molyneux was very much a novice programmer who didn't know what he was doing. And he didn't know anything about making pathfinding algorithms or anything like that, and so he spent a couple days trying to get the little guy to be smart enough to walk around the world the right way, and he just couldn't do it, and he was really frustrated. So he made a little tweak in the editor so that he could raise and lower the ground so if the guy wasn't going the right way, he could just put walls in front of him or raise the ground in front of him, and the guy would go around it. And then he realized that was actually way more fun than the game he was trying to make. So the game actually became, you know, what eventually was known as a god game, where you terraform this whole landscape and create a, like, your army of every, like, peasants that, you know, eventually rise up into knights and then go kill the other guy. And that all came because he just didn't know what he was doing. And, like, needed to basically bullshit around this programming deficiency he had.
So, like, all god games or sim games basically were accidental.
Both
Populous and SimCity showed up because people were being distracted by some other thing and then accidentally created a...
It's awesome. I think that's really fascinating. That, I mean, you know, genres were so... A lot of genres we have now either barely existed then or didn't exist at all. And a lot of them entirely arose out of, you know, complete, luck, I suppose.
It's not literally entirely related to that, but that is a thing that Ron Gilbert kind of talked about during Maniac Mansion as well, of just... We weren't trying to make a scum game. That's just the game that we ended up
making.
Trying
to make like a point-and-click adventure.
Yeah, but I mean, just a game. Yeah, the game.
No one knows what you mean when you say scum.
They weren't trying to make the point-and-click adventure game style that everyone, like, across the entirety of Europe has been sort of vamping on for a billion years. They were just making the game that they wanted to make and built the tool to make that, and then that ended up...
Yeah, standardizing the adventure game, basically. Yeah, that stuff is really interesting. Even Eric Chahi, like, I was fascinated by the fact that when he was making Another World, he actually made the game in sequence, in that it was a story-based game, but he didn't have the story planned out at all. And so by the time he finished making that really cool, elaborate like hand animated intro sequence. He didn't even know what was going to happen after it. He's like, and then I made the protagonist disappear, and then I had to decide where he was going to disappear to. And it's like, what? Like, none of it. He just was like making the whole thing up as he went along. The fact that the game was about this sort of autonomous sidekick character who hangs around with you, like, that wasn't in the spec at all originally. All that stuff just came out of his brain on the fly. Ridiculous.
I also like that he said that he kind of nearly, spoilers, killed Lester Chaykin at the end, because that was basically what he felt like at the end of the project. Just like absolutely dead. There's that scene, yeah, where just Lester is crawling along the ground with no energy left at all. And he was, yeah, completely beat out.
That's always awesome.
I also like the story about his developer relations, though, where the yes. the port to the SNES and the Mega Drive Genesis versions, they wanted to change the intro music, and he got really angry at them and had an argument, which eventually ended in him sending an infinite fax bomb or whatever.
Infinite fax, that's where you tape the paper to itself and just keep it rolling through the fax machine?
For yeah, and send it at 4 a.m. so that it keeps going until when you come into the office.
The whole office full of papers saying, don't change the intro music.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Yeah, just bring in the clock. Although, like normal. Just
we were talking to him, though, the other day, or yesterday, I guess, because that happened weirdly. We ended up talking to Eric Chahi for a day. But he said that at GDC he met the composer from Interplay, who was just like,
"Oh, really?
Yeah." Who was like, "I guess you didn't like the music, and you're still sort of sore about it. Sorry about that. I'm sorry that I changed your music."
Hilarious! God, I totally missed that conversation.
Yeah,
that's the best.
That's kind of hilarious.
The game's coming to the iPad.
Yes, and that game is coming to the iPad.
We played that.
Neato.
Yeah.
Well, it was
that's
good.
Fine. He yeah. showed it at his.
Yeah, college, it was still a prototype, but yeah.
We got to play it.
It's cool that he was experimenting with, well, I guess we can announce that, like a touch version. He was trying to play with that.
Announce.
Yeah, announced for him. Well, he was playing with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll get it to work, but.
Also, speaking of designers still doing cool stuff, Molyneux, who definitely has a very public image as sort of one of those extremely like high-level kind of very director-type figures in the games industry, apparently is hand-coding a 256-player version of Populous that he like busted out during his talk and debugged like in real time when it crashed.
Did he actually get it running?
Yeah, he got it running.
He realized later that he had done a compiled version right before the show, so he could run it out of Virtual Studio or Visual Studio without
setup,
without recompiling. But that was good. At the Q&A, someone came up right at the beginning and said, "Hi, from Electronic Arts. I would love to see the multiplayer Populous you're working on." And he said, "Oh, you want me to load up Populous now? Not now, please." And then
he's like,
"But we'll just do that." And then he loaded it up, and it was amusing to see that Molyneux.
Is that something he's actually going to release, or is it just something?
I don't think he doesn't have the rights to it. I think that it's just he's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. EA owns Populous.
Oh, because of Bullfrog acquisitions and.
Yep.
Oh, EA are in there straight away. They're coming to beat him up.
Yeah, what EA loves is when people who work with their IP announce crazy projects at
but it's Peter Molyneux, what are they going to do?
I know, but that's like the same thing. It was at GDC a few years ago when Will Wright gave his talk and was just like, "And here's what we're working on, Spore." I'm sure that there was someone from Electronic Arts in the audience just going, "What is happening right now? What is this?" Because that game clearly was not ready to be announced at that point and looked nothing like the game that shipped. But
sadly.
And the name of his talk was "The Future of Content." That's nothing to do with anything.
That's good. Yeah, it's like the opposite of his normal talks.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
Best.
Yep.
Good old Peter. I still wanted to ask him about that thing in the manual, in the Populous manual I was reading. I randomly found a boxed Populous in my house. Like, whoa, Populous. And then I flipped through the manual, and there's a nice picture of Bullfrog from when there are like six guys. And it had a little statement saying that Bullfrog's mission is to make the perfect video game. Populous is not that game, but they will make it. I just wanted to ask him how far he's come along that road. Yeah. If they've already made that, done.
Sorry, I failed you and I didn't ask that question.
Sadly, I wasn't there.
God, that would have been beautiful. That is most like obnoxious a question you want to ask Peter Molyneux too on Twitter. This feels like a question he'd be ripe to answer.
I met a bunch of Lionhead guys during the show who all follow the Peter Molyneux 2
God.
Which I enjoyed.
Peter Molyneux 2, it's sometimes indistinguishable, though, from the original.
I imagine Peter Molyneux probably follows Peter Molyneux 2.
Yeah,
too.
I bet.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it is Peter Molyneux.
A game within a game.
No, that'd be the best.
Within a game. Outside of the game.
Did
you see so good.
Did you see when the real Peter Molyneux on Twitter did A Day in the Life of himself?
Well, right at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
When he's like, eating a cookie.
Like, just horrendous, but then he's like, did it just been the worst PR ever. And must have been shut down at some point, I don't know, but you know, classic him, basically. I'm working on this game that we haven't announced. He's cool, but he's a nice guy. Also really tall.
What?
How tall?
How tall would you say Peter Molyneux is?
8 feet. 9. He's pretty gigantic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's big. That's really big.
He and Phil Harrison from Sony could have a tall off.
Will Wright's pretty tall.
Not as tall as
those guys. Pretty tall. I don't know.
Looks like he's so lanky.
He's lanky.
Will Wright's actually 3'6".
Who are other tall game developers? Let's talk about this for a while.
Was it in the
Sweet Convo Bros?
But was it that had chaps
Reggie
about Will
Fiesman
Wright hacking into hotels and stuff like that? Was that in
what?
Was it Masters of Doom that had a chapter about Will Wright
building
robots for Robot Wars? And or was that just a talk I went to? He was like, I remember Will Wright talking about how he entered Robot Wars once or many times with his son and his wife and stuff, and they made a robot that was entirely composed of magnets and duct tape so that when it got up to the robots, just fucking leap onto it. And then inside were like blades that would quickly stab it in quick succession. Apparently, just magnets and duct tape are now banned from robots.
Because of his weird magnetic shank bot.
Will Wright. That guy is awesome.
Yeah, he's the best.
I'm pretty sure that was in one of those books that we reviewed.
That was a good website.
I read that once.
Anything else going on at Video Game Developers Conference?
I mean, you guys want to talk about it, and I have a very different opinion about it than you guys, but Button, we didn't really get into it last time.
Yeah, oh my god,
you didn't enjoy Button?
No, we talked
about it. I saw and experienced Button at the wrong time for me, personally. What? It was just not, you know... It's like if you have a ham sandwich during a traumatic moment, you don't want a ham sandwich for a long time. It was like that.
What led the...
What?
Have you had a bad time pressing buttons recently? You want to talk about it?
No. I mean, that game looked...
Was like your mother a button?
A dead button.
Oh. Whoa.
Jesus. Whoa.
No, she's alive. I'm
alive. She is a
and
button.
A button.
And also a button.
Well, she's a B-U-T-T-O-N, if you
That's want to say. So let's not talk about Button then.
No, your mom's gonna listen to this horse bag.
Yeah.
Did anyone play any other indie games? Because I just played.
Oh, well, I mean, we talked about it a couple of days ago, but I got around to playing Bastion, and that would echo.
I played that.
I'd echo everything Chris said. Oh man, I really
didn't hear what Chris said, but we can.
Oh, it's on the internet. If you just download the cast from a couple of days ago.
Just play it now.
But yeah, that game. I mean,
cast.
I was so.
Cast.
Within a
it
cast.
Was great. I mean, they had really nice headphones, within which is a funny thing to say, but like the headphones. Made my experience. The sound in that game is so good.
Yeah, it's really
and the
nice.
Composer is standing right there, and he's, you know, a friend of Greg's or a friend of one of the guys. That's great. They're all just friends. Like, it's like, oh, I know a guy, and like the guy who does the voice, who does the narrator, it's just like some guy from college.
Cool voice.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But I told him, I'm like, I want to buy the soundtrack. God, the soundtrack is so good.
Did they say how long the experience of that whole game is?
No, I felt like a jerk asking, because it felt like such like a...
How many levels are in your
exactly.
game?
Exactly. You know,
how many upgradable weapons do I have?
Yeah,
that narration that it
what's
has.
What's the level
yeah.
cap?
That could get really fucking annoying.
It does such a good job in the demo of not being...
Yeah, I agree.
Being,
I thought
really
it was
really
it was great.
Of just
then...
accenting your experience and not repeating itself. What was great for me, it was the most subtle thing from a direction standpoint, is the narration's going and telling the story of the game that you're playing, which is really fascinating and not obtrusive. And then you meet a person in the world for the first time after, like, you know, 15 minutes. And it's the guy who's been narrating the game. I mean, you guys played it, but his voice
nice.
Has a subtle shift when he goes from, I'm narrating your game, to, hey, guy. And,
yeah.
like,
it's exactly,
it was so,
it's exactly
it's like
in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
It's like
yeah,
the character in The Big
meet,
Lebowski. Yeah.
What's his nose? And the big left.
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott.
Yeah. Always mustache.
I almost call him Sam Houston every time. The guy who fought Santa Ana.
I always almost call him Sam O'Neill, the guy from Jurassic Park.
That's Sam Neill.
Sam Neill, sorry. Sam O'Neill might also be a guy. He's probably a guy. Sean O'Vanneman.
That's actually correct. But no, I really, really, really loved Bastion. I liked all the parts of it. I mean, yeah, I'm really excited for that game.
I like the narration kind of filled in bits where it, like, why is this world kind of coming together as I walk on it? And it was like, the world was inexplicably thing. He didn't seem to care. Yeah. Just carried on. So that was really good.
Yeah. Oh, the narrator comments on the fact that the world is building.
It's just
itself.
Like kids running along. World seems to be falling into place or whatever. Kid doesn't care. Doesn't seem to notice.
That was good. Deflate the weirdness of the world.
Yeah. Like, well, okay, fine. I guess if he doesn't care, I don't care.
It's funny the changing expectations players have with that stuff, you know, because when everyone played Mario a bajillion years ago, like the original Mario, it's like it would never ever occur to anybody to stop and be like, why is this all completely insane? Like, you know, why is there
a bullet with a beefy fist flying at you?
Why am I going down like a toilet drainage and then ending up in a sewer, like a dungeon? Like, what? Why is any of this? Like, why do I eat a flower and then I shoot fireballs? Like, none of this makes any sense. And so I really liked it in Bastion. It's just like that, and they reinforce the fact that it doesn't fucking matter why. Just like, well, you didn't give a shit about it.
Fuck it.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. A thing that was at the IGF that we could maybe talk about for a second is Amnesia, if anyone has anything to say. We never really talked about that game.
Is that horror game?
Yeah, it's really
good. That's that horror game.
No, but I totally missed things about this, but everyone says it's the scariest thing.
It's awesome.
A huge
did we really never talk? I don't think we ever
talked about
it. No, that game didn't come out before we
were done. It's really cool. It's by the guys who made the Penumbra games, and this is, so they made, I don't know, 2 or 3, I guess, if you count the like expansion thing, of Penumbra, and it's good that they started over with a new franchise with Amnesia, because it allowed them to take all the stuff they learned from doing Penumbra, but just kind of do a nice clean break and be like, this is the culmination of all these really cool horror game mechanics and aesthetics that we've been polishing, and it's scary as shit. It's a terrifying game. Like,
Why is it? Because you have no
weapon. Like, you really have no way to fight back against this roving enemy who just patrols the world. It's not like a scripted guy who pops in at specific moments. He's walking around. And you can't do shit about it. And there are a number of really interesting mechanics that all coalesce to create something really, really terrifying with the way you interact with this enemy, which is that you have your sanity erodes over time, or essentially the longer you're not maintaining a sane state, the sooner you will just collapse on the ground in a sort of gibbering mess. And
so, like, that is the thing that was in Eternal Darkness and things like that. But this game, it's nice
this
because
it's more clever.
The rest of the systems actually support that
exactly.
So,
When you're in the light, you're fine. Your sanity is stable. But if you're in the darkness, it's not. And the longer you stay in the darkness, the more your sanity starts to erode. And you start to hear these little, like, clicking sounds almost. Like, it's a really
like weird bugs
indefinable.
Yeah,
it sounds like bugs chattering.
It sounds like a millipede in your ear. Yeah.
For a long time, I didn't know what it was, and I thought that there was something wrong. Or, like, that there was, it was creepy, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, is that my footsteps? Like, what? This is gross. Ugh. And then I realized it was just, you're, like, losing your grip on reality,
so
basically.
It's good that it confused you and made you...
Exactly, yeah. That's,
did you play that game by yourself?
Yeah, I did. And,
Wow.
So
Chris Remo, giant balls, just massive.
Me and Sean and our housemate Adam played that game together, and
we were
just like, it was like when Scooby Doo jumps into Shaggy's arms.
I literally did that. I was in Adam's arms. Giant arms, just being held, terrified.
Yeah, and so, so when you're in the dark, your sanity erodes, and then also when you're looking, if this crazy roving enemy like comes into view. If you're looking at him, your sanity erodes faster as well. And so, but also, if you're looking at him, it makes it easier for him to see, to like detect where you are. Find you. So what this means, like the combination of all these things means that.
Oh, also it's harder for him to see you in the dark. If you're in shadow.
Exactly. If you're in light, it's easier for him to see you.
Yes. Right.
So So that's important too. So the combination of all of these things means the absolute best way, if he's in the same room as you and he doesn't know where you are yet, the best way to keep him from finding you is to find a dark corner and sit in it and look at the wall.
but then on top of that, the sound design in this game is fantastic. You hear him creep past you, but you can't look at him
because it'll tip him off to where you are.
And you know he's behind you. Exactly. You're staring at the wall.
It creates this fucked up Blair Witch like madness, but it's doing it entirely within the game system.
Sean and Adam and I got to a point in the game where there was an enemy that was invisible, but there was like an inch and a half of water on the floor, so you just saw the splashing footsteps. and a note came up on screen saying, "Don't go in the water." And then Sean like jumped up on a sort of physics based crate and then fell into the water, and the footsteps went just completely ruined. We respawned and tried it again, and it was just, you know, then that we had to do the thing where you crouch and look at the darkest thing and hide, but then you just hear the and the guy sort of wandered around behind us, and you just hear it of like, no, this is, oh my god.
You knew he was like right behind you. You just hear him there, and then I fell off the crate. He killed me instantly.
The grenade rolled down the hill, so to speak.
Yeah.
Oh, but do you have Ben's story about that game?
No.
So Ben Andak, another Thumbs guy who's playing it, he lives in Taiwan, and everyone goes to sleep at lunch and has a nap and turns all the lights off. So he was like, I will play this game at lunch break. And he was playing that and then woke everyone up by screaming.
You can find amazing videos on YouTube of people taping other people playing that game and just completely losing their shit. It's the best.
That's the best. I think Spaff needs to run away now, so we'll take a break.
Video games.
So you're saying Mario's not in a video game? He's not in a video game enough for the Idle Thumbs.
He is a video game.
Mario is not a video game. This is true.
They should... You know what? Calling it. They're going to put out a reboot that is just Mario.
It's a new dark direction.
Link. Samus. They're going to do three of them just in a row. Re-energize it. Man, they...
Well, no, the Samus one will just be called Metroid, and she'll finally be renamed Metroid.
I heard the other M was... Video games.
Oh, man, now it is out of
the box. Oh, man, I played Super Meat Boy a lot today. We've never talked about that.
We've talked about it a lot.
Did we? We didn't talk about it much.
Really?
That game didn't come out when we were making the podcast.
Oh.
We've talked about it amongst
ourselves. Super Meat Boy. I played that game a ton.
Oh, man. You know what? What's funny is when you were playing it in the office that first time, I came by and I was like, ugh, that's not for me.
You came by when I was playing it at home.
That's what I mean, in the office. Our home office.
I thought you meant at work.
No.
That's not for me. And I was like, what? I think you'll like this game. And then we got in a fight. and you went to your room and it ruined my night. And now you're playing it like, this is good.
What happened is the composer for the music, I'm an asshole. I would love to be able to say his name right now and people could go...
Internet.
Glenn, look on the Google. Who composed the music for Super Meat Boy?
Get back here.
No, he's got it right there.
All
right,
keep talking.
But no, we were. I was talking. It was right after I played Bastion. He came over and was talking about Telltale. And then he goes, I composed the music for Super Meat Boy. And I had to lie to him.
Oh, you mean Danny? Yeah, Danny.
Danny. I'm like, we're big fans. I mean, you're a big fan, but I had to say we.
Danny Baranowski.
He's great. Really nice guy. But he produced from his backpack a couple really nice. Special edition soundtracks that kind of riff on a Pink Floyd thing on the front. But and he gave me one. I listened to it and I thought it was great. So then I downloaded the demo and realized that I was wrong. So wrong. And I've been playing that game on and off all day.
Also, the to connect to GDC a bit, I missed this talk, unfortunately, but the Meat Boy, the Team Meat guys gave a talk during the Indie Summit this year, and apparently Edmund McMillan, who was one of the two guys who made the game, along with Tommy Refinez, was, by the time this game was done, was in, like, a deep state of crazy, like, diabetic clinical depression, where he was just sleeping, like, 2 hours at a time and then working for 10 hours, and was basically, like, almost killed himself making this game crazily. And then it came out, and, you know, obviously it was a huge success, and... But he was basically like, you know, if we even if we knew this game was going to be this as successful as it ended up being, and we knew like what the whole process was going to be, if I had to go back, I would not have done that, because it just fucking destroyed him so utterly, which is crazy to me, because these guys did such a good job, I thought, during the development process and leading up to it, of being really like engaging, like, with all the fans.
The image they put out was just like, indie, rad, hilarious stuff. Everything, everyone's having fun making this meat boy.
Took our photo at Sears in our sweater vests.
That's the best image. Yeah. Oh, God. So, yeah, that was a weird thing. They made a game that is good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's that time of year. I'm sure it happens to everybody here, but, like, you playing Super Meat Boy and playing, you know, Greg and those guys playing Bastion and... You're like, gosh, it just kind of like, it plants that seed, you know?
Dream game, it's in my brain. And then you're like, oh no, I'm going to go back to my job and make a real game.
Yeah.
It's going to be sweet, but yeah. Oh.
Yeah, GDC is the Lord.
GDC just lights the fire in your brain. And just
it really does.
Magic and majesty of games.
Yeah,
it absolutely does.
It is amazing what those guys sacrifice, though, to make all of their stuff. That's terrifying.
Like the Bastion guys were like, oh, do you have an office? We have a room in the house that we all live in.
Yeah.
Like, sweet.
Yeah, you know, and like, you know, it's you build a meager savings account and then just pull the Scrooge McDuck lever on it and all the money goes away.
Yeah, you pull the Scrooge McDuck lever and then 5 seconds later all of the coins
is
depleted.
Empty. It's just like,
oh,
or is that
well,
like, eh. Yeah. But it's that's so terrifying to me to be like, well, this is my and then Greg actually said it really well, like
this is Greg Kasavin.
Sorry,
who Sean calls Greg all the time.
He's a friend. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, but I mean...
Yeah. I'm being too conversational.
Bob.
Oh, man. You saw Bob this week?
Yeah, Weinstein. Yes.
So anyway,
but,
Greg Kasavin, executive editor of GameSpot.
And, you know, he said, you know, who knows how this game will do, but no matter how it does, I will always have it. Like,
yeah,
I'm
no,
proud
that's,
of it.
That's
you
totally
know, like,
true, yeah.
It's, I did it, and if this game sells nothing, and we all have to go find jobs after this, then that stinks, but... nothing.
They got Bastion out of the deal.
Yeah. Nobody like, will take this out. This won't cease to exist.
Well, so there was a really good point that was made by Andy Schatz, who is making Monaco. Who I mean, that game looks. I don't know if you guys have played it, but it's rad.
I saw it at IGF last year, but
yeah, it was cool. It's a top down 4-player cooperative heist game, and it's really nice. And he made it after his company Pocket Watch Games. He made these really interesting like wildlife simulations, because he's really into environmental issues and you know, protecting species and things like that. And he was making these games, and he was making his third one, which was about dinosaurs. And like he's like, oh man, this is gonna be crazy, a game about dinosaurs, like people haven't done this right yet, like this is gonna be awesome. But it just wasn't working, like it just was not working at all. And he just couldn't make it fun. For some reason he just couldn't find like the spark there, and he was just going into this deep state of depression, you know, like a lot of these happens with a lot of these guys who just don't know entirely what's next because they're not in the security of a large firm. And he's like, oh, I'm just going to make some other thing. So he went and he just started making this game Monaco that he'd been had in his brain for like 9 years. And a matter of days later, he had a playable prototype going, and then he just cranked on it, and he entered it in the IGF after 5 weeks of development and then won the entire IGF that year. By the time he won the IGF, the game had only had 12 weeks of development on it. And he entered it after 5 weeks, and you know it's now been more than a year later, and he's still working on it. But he, you know, he's going to finish it. Obviously, like he's done so much that it's clearly going to get there. But he made a really good point, which is that, you know, regardless of how this game does, this is similar to what Greg was saying. But
Greg Kasavin, GameSpot.
Greg Kasavin, GameSpot. Sorry,
you know,
for the readers.
Exactly. Regardless of how this game does, if it does well, and he makes a bunch of money, great. He gets a bunch of money and he gets sort of the recognition for having made this game. If it does poorly and he doesn't make a bunch of money, he still always has that recognition, which makes it more likely that he'll get sort of given another chance to do something cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I thought, was a really important point to make. Because if you're going out and just doing something just cynically, just to make a bunch of money and that's it, if it fails, you don't really have anything. You know, you might if it does succeed, fine, you might make a bunch of money. If it doesn't, you're kind of left with nothing. But if you make something that really clearly at least speaks to you, it's probably going to speak to some number of other people. And even if it doesn't do well, you will be left with the recognition that, oh man, this guy went out and like tried to do something really cool. And I think that is one of the reasons guys like Tim Schafer, who has, you know, he hasn't made like a ton of really huge, successful, like light the industry on fire games, but he's really well regarded for obvious reasons. I mean, his games aren't huge failures or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he's out there making games that are unique and cool and respected for various reasons, it means, you know, he and Double Fine, they get to keep trying again. Yeah. Whereas some company that's just out there just like pumping out whatever crap that just doesn't end up making it, eventually it's just going to kind of go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really valuable point and very, very well said. So Andy Schatz, that guy's cool. And Monaco, hopefully it is successful.
You mean Andy?
I mean Andy, sorry.
A. It's like, didn't get the D out. Yeah, it's just funny because to think about how, well, I'm gonna make my game. I have this one sort of chance, you know, like, well, I have this much in the savings, and you know, my programmers get this much in the savings. We're gonna run at it, you know, and you kind of have to pick your pony, because you have all these ideas,
yeah.
You know, and like picking the one that you know you're gonna be able to get at least to the finish line is a terrifying proposition for me. And, like, I wrote a blog post about it like 2 years ago, and I was trying to write something, and a personal thing. Like, I was working on a personal project, and I wrote about, like, sort of the crippling, how crippling it is to make that initial choice of, like, okay, I'm going to spend the next 4 months, and that's not even that, you know, it's a chunk of a game development time. I'm going to spend the next 4 months making this thing, and I'm not going to get those 4 months back, so I have to pick the thing
right
that I believe in the most. And then you quickly realize, like, there's no metric for picking what you believe in the most. You right. just have to kind of be,
yeah,
like,
just gotta go,
like, go into yeah. a room and point at something, and hopefully that's it. I just can't, like, it's a very cool thing that all those guys do.
It really is.
You know.
Take some balls.
Big ones, not as big as Chris's, though, who played Amnesia by himself.
Yeah.
Chris is actually 42% ball.
It's kind of a little uncomfortable, but...
But I can play Amnesia by myself, which is cool.
Yeah, so that works out.
I thought it was just you role-playing as Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to talk about? GDC complete.
Achievement unlocked.
I was going to bring up the Brian Moriarty talk about Ebert. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we can talk about that.
You and Sean can punch each other? No, I don't know.
Did you see that talk?
No. I just want to get Sean involved as an adversarial character in this narrative.
I disagree.
Yes.
Go on.
Regale us.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty near the end of the show, wasn't it?
Because I think I actually agree with Brian Moriarty on this one.
That Loom is a good game?
Oh, man, Loom is the best game.
I love Loom, yeah.
I pitch Loom as a game design for a Jonas Brothers game, like my last...
Really?
Like my last month at Disney.
Oh, man.
I wanted to do...
Speaking of what you did at Disney.
I was... What was I doing? Yeah, we can talk about that, I guess.
Yeah, do it.
What?
So when I was... Yeah, I don't know.
Whoa, ultimate seg.
Well, I'll talk about how Loom... So I was a creative development producer at Disney, which is basically like, hey, we have this license, we have this property, we have the Jonas Brothers, we really need a DS game for this. What should we make? And that was my job, which is kind of a cool job when you think about it, but you're also making a Jonas Brothers game. So what I wanted to do... was Ape Loom, that the Jonas Brothers could learn to, like, be... Like, they could do all the things they went to high school to do. You know, like, they had to, like, meet like girls...
Chemistry,
and, like, yeah, they had to, like, meet girls and, like, do their homework and, like, do their chores, but they did that through, like, learning spells on their guitar. So, like, if you had to, like, cut the lawn... Like, mow the lawn, like, cut the grass, you learned cut, and then you could learn... You could use cut everywhere in the game with, like... You know, very,
people,
very like Loom. Yeah. You could get slice up, you could shank a guy. But no, you could go to the prom and like cut a rug. Or you could like
what?
Man.
And then if you did it in reverse,
classic,
you could grow something. So you could like grow your hair, you
right.
I wanted to have grow some balls when you had to like ask a girl out. But that was the whole, it was like
use cut on your balls.
Cut
don't
your balls
select
off.
It the wrong direction.
This game surely was not approved because the Jonas Brothers balls were a hot spot. They were a selectable region.
I see here, yes, we have some notes about being able to click on the oldest Jonas Brothers balls. Yeah.
It appears
yeah, I know they're not the size of Chris Remo's, but what do you want? You want them bigger? What do you want?
Balls are a theme. Anyway.
Yeah, they were sprites, though, so we could just swap them out. It wasn't too tough.
You swap them out with robots for the German localization.
So, yeah, that was my job at Disney. What do you want to talk about, Chris?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Got any interesting stories about what you got up to at Disney?
I got really drunk at the company Christmas party my last year there. Just hammered. Just trashed. No, I mean, it's a hard seg. So what Chris wants me to talk about is... So I got my start in the game industry. I was a student at USC.
Man, sorry, this is sounding like your Caddyshack Bill Murray.
In a...
Why get up with the lever. Why would you do this? He was going to tell the fucking story.
No. What is Bill Murray saying, Caddyshack?
Just to give it to Bruce Team. Who do they give me? The Dally Lemon himself. Bald. Little robes.
Skip to the end.
The grease. Gunga Galunga?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gunga Galunga, Chris.
Okay, thanks, John.
Gunga Galunga.
Thank you.
What was I talking about?
You're talking about being at Disney.
Disneyland?
You were talking about Mickey Mouse.
This is okay. The worst podcast.
So, no. I got started at Disney when I was a student at USC and needed a summer job. And I was a film. I don't think I was a film. It doesn't matter. I was studying something. I think it was probably undeclared. And I applied for an internship at Disney Interactive Studios, making video games. It was a creative development internship, and I had no idea what it was. And I was unemployed at the time, and my parents had cut me off. So the same day I applied to work at Disney, I also applied to work at the Outback Steakhouse. It was a pretty awesome day in my life. So my pickup truck, sad. On the next day, I went to see Harry Potter 3. By myself on my birthday. So it was really good. I had no friends in LA at the time. And it was the summer. Anyway, so I get this job, and one of the first things they ask us to do is I worked for this great guy. His name's Chris Takami. He was a creative development director there. And it was before, I kind of mentioned it the other day, about the indie game scene, how, working at a publisher, mid-sized developers would bring in their pitch for a game, and a lot of it was art, and there was sometimes a vertical slice that they put together, but it was really just kind of art and a pitch, and that was really what my job entailed. It was seeing these things and then doing them internally as well. And Disney had been trying to crack a couple larger concepts, so they created this intern program of there was six of us, where they said, hey, work with this guy who was a designer and sort of a creative director, and put together a pitch for a game that you would play, because we have no idea how to tackle this property. And the property at the time is Mickey. And that was...
Was that Mickey Mouse?
Mickey Mouse, sorry. I don't mean to... Yeah, for the readers at home, yeah.
Yeah.
So we got to work making a video game that would ultimately become Epic Mickey, which was... 8 years ago. It was me and a few guys sat in a room all summer, and we were getting paid, which was cool, but there was no sort of avenue for us to pitch anything, and we were working on this game about... we'd all kind of been through orientation and learned about this character. We kind of learned the history of the company, and Walt had created this character, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, and then lost the rights to him. Walt Disney. Disney. Sorry.
Okay. Walt Kasavin.
Walt Kasavin, yeah. He created this character, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, and we always thought the character was really cool, but he had lost the rights to it to Universal, so he changed the ears on him and turned him into Mickey Mouse, and that's how Mickey was invented. So we're that's the game. The game is this pissed off rabbit. Or the idea of...
This marginalized
character. Yeah, a character going away for 80 years and just watching essentially a carbon copy of himself become the most prolific 2D character of all time. I'm trying to think what year it was. It was right around when we were invading Iraq.
So 2002?
Three? Yeah, 2003, yeah. And I remember seeing a kid in Baghdad in a Mickey Mouse t-shirt. And that was and I was working on Mickey at the time.
Right.
I was
Jesus. Yeah.
He just kind of there's no corner of the planet.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. So it's that all kind of fed into the fact about this little pissed off rabbit. And sort of how powerful of a character an icon, that could be. Yeah. There's no other character that's Bowser hasn't literally been sitting on the shelf for 80 years. You know,
right,
there has been no character that's just been in a time capsule. And we put together some art and, we were thought it was really cool, and we would like close the door and have this little clubhouse atmosphere. And then like the VP of human resources came in, and I was like, "What are you guys working on in here? You guys are getting paid, right?" And we're like, "Yeah." And like, and I stood up, I was like, and showed him the thing. And like 2 days later, we were pitching it to the president of Disney Interactive Studios at the time. It was Buena Vista Games at the time. And yeah, I never left working at Disney. And we pitched it all summer, and then they brought in like Bob Iger, who is the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, and like let us pitch it. And I had to like skip a history final at USC to do it. and we built a prototype, and we worked on the game for like 2 years, and then it had nowhere to go. We had a developer lined up, and it fell through, and then the game was kind of like rolling around. The whole management structure at Disney changed, and they were like, "We're getting this game made." And then enter stage left Warren Spector, and then you have Epic Mickey shortly thereafter. But
I love that you secretly fucking invented Epic Mickey.
Weird thing is that the summer after, we just pitched it to Bob Iger, I had the best boss on the planet. This guy was just like, I was 20? To put like a 20-year-old kid in front of the CEO of the Walt Disney Company and be like, "Hey, pitch this thing." Like, who does that? Like, who doesn't just be like, go to your room, kid. Like, stuff you back in there, take a cigar out and go like get a promotion, you know? Yeah. Like, who the fuck does that? So he just, I mean, what a
mensch. It would have been nice if he had taken the cigar out no matter what, though.
Yeah. It's like, why you can't smoke in here, man? Like, this is California. Pitched the game, and I sat down. There was a room of like seven people, and it was like Bob Iger and like his like guy, and then
his other guy.
He's like a guy you don't know. He doesn't just like enter. He says his name. He's like Steve.
Right. Oh, never says his name. Yeah,
this is guy. And the head of Disney Interactive.
Steve Cassatt, we'll call him.
Yeah, it's for instance. Steve Gaynor actually was his guy. A bespectacled, 22-year-old Steve Gaynor.
Bespectacled.
No, he was spotted. Anyway.
The rare spotted Gaynor.
I remember we pitched the game, and Bob Iger was like, "So this Oswald, like, do we own him? He's ours, right? We own him, right?" And he was like... actually, no. I don't think the company owns him. We think Universal owns him because we had the Disney, like the interactive lawyers, like looking into it. He's like, "Huh. All right. Well, I really like this. This is great. This is really awesome. This is really fantastic. Really great." And then just like left, and that was the end of it. I was like, okay. So like 3 weeks later, I was at home reading ESPN.com, and I was like scrolling through, and I actually have a screen cap of it.
On my laptop. I remember that article because I wrote about it for Kama Sutra,
and it was like. Walt Disney Company trades Al Michaels for a rabbit. And I instantly knew what it was. And I was like, what? So Al Michaels went to NBC Universal to do like Football Night in America, and they got the rights to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit.
Yeah.
And I called my boss, and he was in Vegas at the time, I remember, because it was a Friday night. I was at home reading about animated characters on the internet.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So then there was this whole movement around Oswald, and they brought Oswald back to the company and put out all this merchandise. And Bob Iger came to the studio like about like 6 months later and said, "Okay, guys, I got you Oswald. Like, make the game. Like, why aren't you guys making the game? Like, make the game."
Where's the game?
Exactly. Like, can I play the game? No. And at that time, they'd hired me full time, and I was working on other stuff. Yeah, that was the crazy thing. And then, like, you were down at Disneyland, a month ago? Not even.
Yeah,
it was like Oswald.
They're rebuilding a huge chunk of California Adventure, which is one of the Disneyland theme parks, as this 1930s Hollywood thing. And on all of the walls is a picture of Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, like, with his hammer and nails. Like, we're rebuilding Disneyland. Like, what? That's weird.
Yeah. It's just weird when I see, like, a guy in an Oswald t-shirt, and you're like, you know. I like got in a car wreck.
That was me.
Like 8 years ago. I wouldn't be on that guy. It's kind of weird.
Or would it?
Didn't you also sketch the logo or something?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So the logo, the dripping ink.
This
Mickey
is why you're
logo.
Called Famous Vanaman, by the way. Yeah. Let's just settle it now.
It was on a
That's what you love.
It was on a post-it that summer. It was like I was like dicking around and I had no art skills, but I worked with two amazing artists. Three. A guy named Justin Hunt, who I think is at DreamWorks, a guy named Sean Jimenez, and a guy named Jasser Membrano. And those guys are amazing. So check out their art. I don't know if they're selling any of it, but buy it if they are. Anyway, they were all amazing artists, and I had no skills, but I was, like, doing the GDD. And it's a game design document. Kasavin.
GDD Kasavin.
GDD Kasavin.
Bastion.
And I like had a post-it and I like did this really, and I, it was like even with my left hand or something, I did this really horribly off model Mickey, like I remember just like making a,
you actually pooped,
I actually shit under a post-it and then squished it like a Rorschach test, and that's what it came out. But no, I put that on there and I ended up scanning it in, and that was what I put on every GDD. And then we went to PAX, was it?
It was just fucking everywhere.
It's immaculately rendered everywhere. It clearly been rebuilt in Illustrator, but to this tiniest little thing. And I have the post-it like in a flat file, I think, in my room.
It blows my mind that you fucking were responsible for all this shit.
And it was like
hilarious to me.
I was in college. Like, it was.
But you didn't actually end up working on the like game itself, did you?
No, that was all done in Austin.
You were at Telltale by then. Probably.
They started it, and they started, and they were all in pre-production, and then I came to Telltale. Like, I knew I needed to make games like at a studio, at a developer.
So you guys should stay tuned to the next exciting episode of Isle of Palms when we tell you how Phaedrus was almost in the Jurassic Park game.
Video games.
So before we wrap this up, I want to let everyone know who's going to PAX East this weekend that there will be an Isle of Palms meetup. Marvin from the forums has reserved some spots for us at the City Bar in the Westin, which is right next to the convention center. So Friday at around 7:30 or so, folks are going to show up and we can hang out and get drinks or whatever. So yeah, hopefully we'll see you there.
Take a look on the Idle Thumbs forums for latest news and also amazing conversation about video games
and with all sorts of other
with all sorts of people on the internet. One other thing that I'm going to mention, because I've never mentioned it because it didn't exist last time, is there is an official Idle Thumbs Minecraft server.
Oh, yeah.
So for those of you who play Minecraft and want to wander around a Minecraft server that is well-maintained with a pretty active community of like-minded thumbs, you should visit minecraft.idlethumbs.net, or if you hate typing, idlemc.com. It's maintained by our web administrator, Doug, who is awesome, and a bunch of dudes in the forums. So play
who
Minecraft,
are awesome.
Who are also awesome. Play Minecraft and go to the Penny Arcade Expo, even though they're sold out of passes.
No, there's 250 left for Sunday.
That's true.
Depending on when this comes out.
250 of you could go to the Poker Night panel hosted by me and Sean Vanneman Sunday afternoon.
Jake is fucking...
That's right, 3:30 p.m.
3:30 p.m. in some hall or another.
That'll be a good panel.
Also, I'm on some kind of panel about community management.
Oh, yeah. Also, Chris will be spending all of PAX standing by a Big Daddy statue.
It's not a Big Daddy.
Oh, right. Sorry, it's a new statue.
Yeah.
All new statue.
Wooden robot daddy.
A clockwork man with a human
heart. There's also, I guess we're just lying in a
box. It's actually not that guy either, but yeah, that's fine.
A statue of something. He'll be standing next to a statue of himself, which we have commissioned.
Correct.
Oh, there's a kill screen panel at 4:30 on Friday, which is going to be me and a guy from Twisted Pixel and another guy talking about writing in games. So it should be great.
Also, I'm on a community management panel, but I forget when it is. I think it might also be Sunday.
No, you already said that. With the Big Daddy.
I didn't say when it was, though.
You're going to be with... It's going to be you and a Big
Daddy.
Oh,
yeah. Me and a Big Daddy on a panel. It's going to be cool.
About you, community management.
Yeah. Ken Levine in a Big Daddy suit.
Yeah.
Steve Gaynor dressed up as little sister. Confirmed?
Yeah, confirmed.
Confirmed. You heard it here first.
Anyway, guys, GDC was good.
Yeah, it was great. It was an awesome GDC. Well done to Megan Scavio, who runs GDC. She is the best. Thanks for listening.
Games.
Excuse me.
Fuck off.